All right, we do this every day. It's called The Scoop. We bring you the headlines of stuff we haven't touched on yet. I'll go first, Brian. Here we go. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. Lindsay's got some headlines today, too. Guys, the FBI announced yesterday that no charges will be filed related to the noose found in Bubba Wallace's garage stall at Talladega on Sunday. The FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice said their investigation determined the noose had been in the garage stall since at least October of 2019, and it was not a hate crime directed at Wallace or his team. Many now believe it was a rope used to pull a garage door up and down. But Wallace went on CNN last night with Don Lemon. He's also done several interviews today. Here's what he said last night. He said, quote, "The image that I have and I've seen of what was hanging in my garage is not a garage pull. It was a noose. Whether it was tied in 2019 or whatever, it was a noose," unquote. Brian, what do you think happened here?
I have no idea. I mean, I think it's, you know, I've read reports that the guy who discovered it on Wallace's pit crew went up and down the garages to make sure, like, wait, is this something that's in every garage? And like, I just never noticed. And this garage was the only one where the pull rope up and down, you know, was tied in that shape. So was it tied by someone who wanted to kind of stealthily make a noose? Maybe. It was clearly couldn't have been aimed at Bubba Wallace for this year at Talladega because it happened in 2019. But I don't know. I have zero idea why one would be tied that way and no other rope in the garage at the garage at Talladega would be that way. It's a very strange setup. But it also explains, John, why people didn't immediately recognize that noose, that tie, as just the thing that opens and closes the garage, because it's not like that in any of the other ones.
Here's a theory. Tell me if you think it holds up. Keep in mind that NASCAR is evolving as we speak. I mean, this was a sport that a month ago, Confederate flags weren't only omnipresent, but they were accepted and in some ways celebrated by a lot of fans in NASCAR. Until Bubba Wallace and other people in the sport made it clear that that symbol, the Confederate flag, made black people incredibly uncomfortable and they needed to eradicate it. So they went ahead and did that. In my own head, I'm thinking that somebody probably tied a noose back in 2019 as a bit, as a joke, and no one thought twice about it. Because it was kind of, Brian, for lack of a better word, accepted in that culture. And now what we're seeing is things that will no longer be tolerated.
And yeah, so I think that's absolutely possible.
I think both things could be true. I don't, you know, people are pointing a finger and they're saying, you know, like I heard other talk shows today saying NASCAR embarrassed themselves. NASCAR mishandled this. They made a giant something out of nothing. I think that as you try and change the culture, things like this are going to happen. You're going to find things that were acceptable years ago that we're trying to move forward on. And I don't, you know, here's the weirdest thing, Brian. I said this yesterday. Isn't it a good thing that somebody didn't tie a noose over the weekend and hang it in Bubba Wallace's garage? That's a good thing, not a bad thing.
I agree with you. But I also think it's revealing of NASCAR and the sort of the culture that we're talking about, that it was that like it was believable. It wasn't like people went, oh my, there's no way, like that's got to be a hoax. And this wasn't a hoax. It was, I guess, a misunderstanding, a misreading, or whatever it was. But it wasn't like somebody planted it there as a hoax. But yeah, I think, John, what you're saying is absolutely possible, that somebody thought it would be funny and tied a regular rope into a noose and, you know, giggles about it and whatever. And it just stays there because nobody notices, because there are seven black people that are involved in NASCAR generally. So
I think you might be on the high side there. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Lindsay, you got one. What do we got?
All right, guys. Brooks Koepka will withdraw from the Travelers Championship after his caddy tested positive for coronavirus. Koepka, who is currently fourth in the official world golf ranking, said he would withdraw from the event after Ricky Elliott tested positive for coronavirus. I'm going to pull out to protect everybody else. I think it's the right thing to do, Koepka told Golf Week. I don't want to risk anyone's life if they have respiratory issues or underlying conditions. The only way this tour can continue is if guys do this sort of thing and be proactive about it. Do you guys think that Koepka made the right decision to withdraw from the Travelers Championship, or do you think this was like premature?
It's a great question, and I'm glad you brought this up about the golfers, because six people ended up testing positive for coronavirus. Five of them were caddies, and one of them was an actual golfer in the field. Brian, this, and keep in mind, golf, I've been playing a lot of golf. Golf is naturally socially distant. You can very easily stay 6 feet away from other people. It's not hard to do. Even if you hit a ball right next to somebody else, you just let one guy walk up and hit, and then the other guy goes in and hits. I think Koepka is doing the smart thing, erring on the side of caution. And this is the new normal. If a quarterback tests positive in the NFL, we're probably going to have to kneecap the whole quarterback room. And whether that means it leads to a forfeit or leads to a taxi squad quarterback playing in a game, it's better than 25 other people getting COVID. So I think Koepka's doing the right thing. And I think on top of it, he's doing the thing that we're going to have to start doing in sports. If the guy you've been standing right next to and he's been handing you your clubs for the past 3 weeks comes down with COVID, you got to take yourself out until you can get tested and quarantined for a little while.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. There's no alternative but what you're talking about, which is why this is so complicated. Because if it's going to happen in golf, it's going to happen in football. And, you know, at a higher level where people are naturally closer together all the time. But, yeah, Brooks Koepka, he has to withdraw from this tournament. It's irresponsible to do anything but that.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
How difficult would it be, again, as a professional golfer who's had his caddy for God knows how long, how difficult would it be for him to just replace his caddy just for this tournament and still do it?
The reason that Koepka is that makes a lot of sense on the surface, but the reason I think Koepka's going out is he's assuming that he may be pre-symptomatic.
Correct.
In other words, that he's realizing, if my caddy, who I've been standing next to for the past 5 days and probably traveling with and having dinner with, if he's already testing positive for COVID, I may be 2 to 3 days away from testing positive. And Lindsay, there's no way to know. There's no way to know that if he goes out and hires another caddy, that tomorrow Koepka starts showing symptoms. His caddy gets it, then the other guy's caddy gets it, then somebody. And those guys, by the way, Brian, are all flying on the same chartered plane from tournament to tournament. So if one guy on the plane gets it, he puts everybody else at risk. I think in case he's pre-symptomatic, he's got to get out.
Yeah, this is it. This is the reality until we have, certainly at least until we have a better handle on spread, on infection and what it looks like and what it means. Like, you have to take every precaution.
All right, Fudge. Guys, organizers of the New York City Marathon, which had a record number of runners last year, over 53,000, have officially canceled the 2020 race, which was set for November. They did this even though the Yankees, Mets, Giants, Jets, Knicks, and Nets are all planning on playing well before that. And in the case of football, they're planning on at least some fans. Are the marathon organizers here doing the right thing, Brian? Kind of similar to the Koepka question, but this is in November, and all these runners could theoretically run with masks. Do you think they should have at least tried, like the other sports are trying, to put on an event?
No. I think if you believe that your event, and the New York Marathon takes thousands and thousands of people and puts them all together, and you know you're running, even if you're running in a mask, you're still running, you're breathing very hard, people take down their masks sometimes, like it's a bunch of people with a bunch of support staff and all this infrastructure that has to come, and you have to seal off streets and you have to provide water, and all of these things have to happen to run a marathon. And you know, we're not done with the first wave yet, but there's an incredible worry about a surge coming, a second wave coming in the fall and into the winter. And you got to remember, New York City had to shut itself down to make, you know, to bend this curve. It was the location.
Lindsay,
of some
didn't
of the
you
worst.
Tell me?
You just have to. You yeah, can't do these kinds of things yet.
Lindsay, didn't you tell me before the show that New York heightened regulations again today? That they did something else to protect people today?
Yeah, I think the governor announced today that anybody traveling from any of these high risk areas where there's been a significant uptick in coronavirus cases,
like Florida, California, Texas, all the places
the
are showing spikes.
The states that he mentioned, the states that he mentioned were Florida, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, among a couple others. They'll have to quarantine for 14 days when they get to New York. And it's going to be mandatory. And if you could get caught in a multitude of different ways, whether it's a hotel staff member, if you get pulled over and you're asked about your travel plans and they want to see your itinerary, you can get fined. I think it's $2,000 if you are caught violating this mandatory order.
I think any big thing where you're inviting 50,000 people to come into the city can be put off for a year. And
you have to. I mean, John, look around what other countries, like Americans are kind of chafing against some of the restrictions that we have. And I want to get out there. I want to do stuff. Like, go look at what they're doing in other countries, particularly in Asian countries, and the restrictions about going everywhere in any building. Like Beijing had a tiny little resurgence of a few cases, and they're going back to shutting the city down, and all these the measures that we think are extreme in America are nothing compared to what most of the world that has a handle on this is doing to keep it that way.
All right, Lindsay, let's do one more. You got it.
All right, last one really quick here. Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott was diagnosed with the coronavirus 10 days ago, making him perhaps the most high-profile NFL player to reveal that he had the virus. Elliott, who shared his coronavirus experience while on his Twitch stream earlier today, said that he was concerned about the safety of players with the NFL preparing to return to training camps in July. Elliott said, quote, "I just feel like there's a lot of moving parts that have to be figured out. I just don't know how they can keep the players healthy. You got to put the health of the players first." End quote. Do you guys think that the NFL seems like they even have a plan to put the players first?
It doesn't seem like it, but they have to, Brian. They have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't be flying this blindly into the hurricane. Every once in a while, a doctor or a lead medical official will come out. I just can't imagine that football is moving forward completely oblivious to Corona. How about you?
I feel like they don't. I think they're not making any statements, or they're not doing anything until they have to. And right now, because it's so far away, there's still enough time where they feel like they don't have to do anything yet. But eventually, I think football, by the time the fall rolls around, what we're going to be seeing is going to be incredibly restrictive. And there's going to be a big fight between the players who have to live under these conditions and the league who wants these games to be played.
And keep in mind that Ezekiel Elliott, the person Lindsay focused on in her story, is scheduled to be at the new SoFi Stadium to play against the Rams on opening night, Sunday night, September 13th. We're sitting here on June 24th. And as of right now, it's supposed to be Rams-Cowboys to open SoFi Stadium right now with the possibility of socially distanced fans. I just don't see all that happening. I think there's a chance it gets pushed back. I think there's a chance there's no fans. I think there's a chance it gets completely canceled. All those things I think are in play, and only time will tell. How's baseball going to execute this plan? CJ Nitkowski, who's one of the most outspoken ex-baseball players out there, player turned broadcaster, will join us next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Mason in Ireland show. And baseball announced finally this week that they're going to play 60 games. We don't know how COVID is going to figure into this. We don't know if spring training is long enough. We don't know whether or not this is all going to go off exactly as it's scheduled, but we know somebody will have an opinion on it, is CJ Nitkowski, who is one of the best former baseball players turned analysts out there. Works for MLB Radio. You can get tried, listen to him all the time on Sirius. CJ, thank you for doing this, man. How are you holding up?
Appreciate it. Thank you. It was a very nice introduction. We're holding up well here. You know, I'm in Atlanta. I was just telling Michael it hasn't been as bad here. I know it's been tough in some other places and we're kind of out of the country, and it hasn't been too bad. So we're holding up. We certainly miss baseball like everybody else does, and we're kind of watching what's going on around the country and just kind of keeping our fingers crossed that we'll continue to make some strides in the right direction, and that and normal life will be back sooner than later, we hope.
CJ, like when you talk to other guys, are they concerned about the labor agreement that was the negotiations that seem to go so poorly? Are they concerned about the virus? Is it all of it? Like, what's the ratio of that kind of chatter right now?
Yeah, it was interesting. We've been fortunate to get a lot of guys to come on Sirius and do some radio just because they're home, and to be a little bit more honest because it's kind of an emotional time. But I would say that most guys kind of kept how they felt about the labor negotiations close to the vest. I know that there was a lot of leaking going on between both sides of players and the union, and there was a handful of guys that were pretty outspoken. But I think more often than not, the overriding sentiment you got from guys was really the concern about health. As much as they wanted to be back playing baseball, a lot of these guys, of course, have families, not just their immediate family, but, of course, you know, thinking about moms and dads and aunts and uncles and everybody else. And if you got somebody high risk in your family, that seemed like where there was a lot of the focus. But I do think a lot of these guys are very anxious to get back. And I think one of the biggest indicators of that is for all the players that we have, it's not a big number, but those that we know that are immune compromised, right? Some guys that are diabetic, or David Dahl out in Colorado missing his spleen. There's some coaches that have had some health issues as well in the past. They all seem like they want to get back. So far, we haven't heard of anybody that doesn't want to be out there, doesn't want to be playing. And so even though there are risks, you got the overriding feeling that these guys want to get back to what they know was normal, and that's playing Major League Baseball.
We're talking to CJ Nitkowski from MLB Network Radio. CJ, I'm not sure what to make or how big of a deal the universal DH and the starting with the runner on second base really is, because it's the same for both teams, so it's an even playing field. But those are pretty radical changes. Like, the Dodgers are going to be like even more loaded than we thought if they can stick Justin Turner at DH and maybe, you know, put Kike Hernandez or Gavin Lux into the infield. I how big of a deal are those two things, the universal DH and the runner on second in extra innings?
Yeah, they are, and it's interesting because both of these things were negotiated under the safety and health protocols, right? There was no agreement between Major League Baseball and the players. If there was an agreement, we would have had even more things to talk about, some expanded playoffs and some other things that would have been happening. But what this ended up being was Rob Manfred implementing, because they couldn't come to an agreement, first of all, schedule, but then these other things that were considered part of the safety part, right? So the idea that the universal DH, which is something I think we're going to see in baseball at full-time some point. It's not going to happen next year because this is only going to happen for this year now because there was a lack of an agreement. But from a health and safety standpoint in regard to the virus, that might be a little bit of a stretch, but it is better for the game. And then it's also looking out for guys and making sure that these pitchers, while they're only going to have about 3 weeks to get ready, that the National League guys also aren't worried about trying to get going as far as their hitting goes as well. Right? Just focus on those arms and get ready. So I could appreciate that. I'd like to see it in the game, quite honestly. I think it's better off. I think it's better from a competitive balance standpoint. It's better when we talk about, I think, wild card stuff because of how much interleague play that we play, and to have that consistent DH. And also, I think about, you know, in the off seasons for teams, whether it's trading for players or looking to sign free agents, National League teams are going to stay away from those guys that maybe their defense is starting to wane a little bit and they're really known for their bat, right? I think J.D. Martinez is a really good example of that. There was no National League team that were going to give him the $105 million that he got from the Boston Red Sox. That wouldn't make sense, right? You'd have to put him in the outfield. Dodger fans probably remember seeing him out there in the outfield a little bit during the World Series. And so I think the idea of giving a team like the Dodgers and every other National League team a legitimate shot at a bat like J.D. Martinez in the offseason, or it would be a trade, I think that matters. So I think it's good that we'll get to that. It's going to look different. I know some purists hate it. I think it's better off for the game. I really, really dislike the runner at second base. And I don't want to, I know we have to be open to different ideas in this situation right now. We have to be thinking about health, and that should be a priority. But I'm thinking at that point, if we get to the 10th inning, you've been out there for probably 4 hours, plus the guys have been there a couple of hours early at least. I mean, those guys are already together for 7 or 8 hours. Is another 30 minutes or an hour really going to make a difference? And so I don't love it. It feels a little gimmicky. I know both teams will get a shot at it. It is something, though, that you do kind of, it's, you know, with youth baseball. I have a 12-year-old, my youngest, and coach, and sometimes when you go an extra inning, they'll do those kinds of things. And I don't know, it's just awkward, man. And again, I don't want to be in a complaining mode at all. We should be open and roll with whatever Major League Baseball throws at us because of the unusual circumstances. But I think I could have done without that one.
Talking to CJ Nikoski, MLB Radio Network Radio. What about the, like, what happens in a 60-game season? Like, you go back and look at the standings 60 games into last year, there was a lot of weird stuff going on. Like, how many of the 10 teams that make the playoffs this year do you think are going to be sort of, whether you want to call it fluky or whatever, like, what happens this year when they actually start playing games?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think the feedback that we've seen so far was on a conference call today with the general manager for the Rangers. I call games for them as well. He almost seemed excited about it. I mean, it's not your first choice, but the idea that essentially we're almost near what is the regular trading deadline, right, July 31st in baseball, and everybody's tied for first place. Like, if that was to really happen in the season, that would be absolutely chaotic, and it never would happen. And so we do kind of get this excitement for 1 year when we have the sprint. But you're absolutely right. Something's going to happen. There is going to be a team that's going to make the postseason, I think. Good chance of it happening that we had never would have expected them and probably would have made it if it was a 162-game season. And I think the opposite is true. There's probably a team in there that we thought was a cinch to make the postseason that may not, because now we are talking about the idea of something, whether it's an injury or lack of performance, can really end up hurting a team because there's not enough time to make up for it, right? There's one thing in our game that we don't necessarily have, and that's Cinderella stories. A 162-game season kind of eliminates that from happening. You can have a couple of good months, maybe even a good 4 months, two-thirds of the season, but it's pretty difficult if you're not built to win over the course of 162 to make it to the postseason. So I think that part of it is definitely going to be different. I think it'll be fine. It'll also be people aren't happy with it. Again, there's not much we could do about it in this situation, and we just got to roll with it. But I think you're absolutely right that we're going to see a story or two that may surprise us. And for some fan bases that maybe were going into 2020 realizing they probably weren't a postseason team, they actually might find themselves rooting for their team in October.
Okay, CJ, I threw out an idea earlier that may be, I say this up front, really, really stupid. It was well received by the knuckleheads on this show, but you are a perfect person to ask. Here's my, what I think is a dumb idea, but it might just be dumb enough to work. We're playing a 60-game season. Pitchers that are elite pitchers that are starters. So I'll use Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw from the Dodgers as examples. That means they're only going to get 10 starts. If they're lucky, maybe 11 or 12. 10 to 12 starts. You mentioned it's a jammed up spring training. It's a 3-week fast-tracked spring training. Is it ridiculous of me to suggest that you don't use these guys as traditional starters, but instead throw them 3 to 4 innings like you would in a spring training game and maybe try and get them into 20 games of the 60, 20 to 25 rather than just 10? Is that a ridiculous idea?
It's not a ridiculous idea. I think that, you know, remember too, because we're playing these 60 games in 66 days, most weeks there will be at least one off day in there, which creates kind of an interesting situation as well. We know that our game has gotten really creative over the last few years, whether it's using openers or what we're doing with relievers and having bulk guys and other things. So I don't doubt that there are teams running through models of ideas of what may be the most efficient. The question then becomes, you know, it's tough when you have a starter, especially elite guys. I would say, if anything, you might do that with your non-elite guys. The guys that, you know what, they're pretty good going through the order one, maybe two times, right, facing maybe 18 innings. That's a number that you're comfortable with. Could they, you know, you like them at 4 innings, you don't really like them at 6. That group of guys, maybe. That might actually work with those guys a little bit more. Would you rather just start that guy every 5 days and you really only feel like his stuff is good, say, for 4 innings? So would you rather get him in there 2 games a week and perhaps you get 6 innings out of him? And then when you start sitting there and looking at the course of a season and say, I can get more innings out of this guy. I wouldn't want to do that to Walker Buehler. I wouldn't want to do it necessarily to Clayton Kershaw either, because with those guys, what they're so established and they're so good, they're also really set into their routines. And so to ask them to say, hey, instead of giving me everything you have for 5 days, doing it work for 4 and getting ready to do it again, I want you to only throw 3 innings, take 2 days off and be ready to do that again. That might be asking a lot, especially for the older guys, even though if you sit there and add it up, there might be more innings to be had. That's probably the risk versus reward there that doesn't necessarily line up for me. the back end guys that you like, back end of the rotation that maybe you're not 100% sold on getting you deep into the game, that could be a possibility, sure.
All right, good. So it wasn't the dumbest idea in the world. All right, hey CJ, we're like you, man. We're looking forward to getting it back out on the field. By the way, let me just end with this. How confident are you that this is going to play out the way they've laid it out? In other words, should we all be ready for COVID to kneecap or alter this in some way? Or are you pretty confident they're going to be able to do it?
Gosh, I hope not. I would say this. I mean, we've all been following everything really closely, and this is not a shot at them, but even the experts have struggled to predict, you know, exactly how things are supposed to go with this. And understandable, you're trying to predict a virus and how it's going to spread or not spread around the country. A bunch of Americans were individuals, and we have a tendency to want to make our own choices. And so I think that controlling the thing, it would be foolish to think that we can, and to try to predict on how this is going to go down. We're all guessing, even experts to some degree. They're educated guessers. The rest of us are straight guessers. And I'm hoping so. That just hope like crazy. I know that obviously we've already seen some positive tests, and we get a little bit of a reaction that's going to continue to happen. We just hope that obviously nothing that ends up being really serious and really detrimental to any individuals in our game, but then also for what it could do for the season. So I just hope for the best and pray that it ends up not being an issue.
All right. Hey, man, thank you very much for doing this. Stay safe. We look forward to having you on again soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure. You take care, guys.
All right. There's CJ Nitkowski. Coming up, we'll circle back to our top story of the day. Guys are starting to opt out of the NBA bubble, including a pretty prominent Laker, at least a starter. We'll talk about what that means. Coming up next, still to come on this show, Game of Games. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. But I'm getting a lot of people agreeing with that episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that makes you cry when you didn't see it coming. I'll tell you. A lot of people jumping in on that one. We had a question earlier that's kind of gone viral. I saw Adonde and Hollinger jump in on it. John Hollinger, what movies made you cry that you completely didn't expect it? Like you went into the movie thinking one thing and you coming out with another. And we've gotten a lot of great suggestions on that. But Brian, I want to circle back to at the top of the show. By the way, update on your baby situation. Is everyone clean and stable in the Kamenetsky household?
I would say everyone is clean. The baby seems a little on edge. The boys, I believe, are upstairs playing video games, and my wife is doing yeoman's work, multitasking and doing all these things while I do this.
By the way, you have three children, correct?
Yes.
Are you done?
Oh, yes. Yes,
that was with much certainty.
Steps have been taken.
Did you take them or did your wife?
I took them.
Okay, there you go.
If you want a job done right, John, you have to do it yourself.
So a good buddy of mine who I went to college with has four boys, and the fourth one was a surprise, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So when the fourth one was being delivered, him and his wife had talked openly, and so he was scheduled to be snipped a couple of weeks after the delivery of the fourth one. And the delivery of the fourth boy, there was an unexpected C-section situation. So the doctor said to Kim, my friend's wife, hey, since I'm going down there already, would you like to get your tubes tied? Because I know you guys have decided you don't want to have any more kids. And Kim said, yes, 100%. Thank you for suggesting it. And my buddy made the mistake of saying, oh, wow, doc, you just did me a huge favor. I'm going to be able to cancel my procedure now. Mm-hmm. To which his wife, remember, on the delivery table at the time said, with colorful F-word descriptions, you will not cancel that. In no uncertain terms will you cancel that. We're going double protected just to make sure.
Yeah, so I don't blame her. Yeah, I don't blame her, but I also think that guy deserves it for being stupid enough to say something
to
out
speak
loud
up in that scenario.
In
yeah,
that, like you don't say a word in that context. Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, completely agree. Nice going, Jordan. But Brian, we had a story off the top of the show, and you actually have written about one of Brian's many other jobs. Brian is multi-talented and has many people that pay him to speak and write and do other things relating to the world of sports. Brian and his brother Andy write a lot of content for The Athletic. By the way, shameless plug for The Athletic, Brian. You got it. I don't know if you saw it, but I retweeted. You guys were nice enough to include me in a story you did last week.
Oh, yeah, this was fun.
On my broadcast idol, broadcast hero, is Chick Hearn, the longtime late great voice of the Lakers. And you guys came up with a really cool idea. You tracked down all of the old Laker announcers, like everybody who's had the job since Chick. And you sent us all a different YouTube clip of Chick calling 3 or 4 minutes of game action and asked us to highlight what we were like to write back to you, mm-hmm. what jumped out at us and what we liked the most about the way Chick called a game. And so Spiroditas, Paul Sunderland, Bill McDonald, me, Mike Trudell, Adrian Garcia Marquez, Francisco Pinto. I don't think I'm – Stu Lance. You got Pat Riley.
Pat Riley. Yeah, that was the fun one.
Yeah, and Pat – I thought Pat, like, totally embraced the challenge and did a really good job with it. Somebody, I retweeted that this week, and somebody wrote back to me, this is the very first story that I really, really regret not subscribing to The Athletic.
Oh, wow.
Which was a huge compliment to you guys. And Andy, your brother, wrote back and said, I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but you're missing out. And Andy's right. If you're not subscribing to The Athletic, it's not expensive. What is it, Brian? Maybe 10, 15 bucks a month?
I think right now I'm almost positive that you can get a special for less than that. But I think almost every introductory rate is about 60 bucks for the first year.
And
that's
it
$5
is,
bucks a month.
It is so worth it. I read stuff every day. And this is a long way of getting to the point that today you wrote an article about Avery Bradley and the fact that Avery Bradley has told the Lakers and the NBA he will not participate on the Orlando campus. The main reason is, there's more than one, but the main reason is he has a 6-year-old son who has respiratory issues. He doesn't think, he never applied for it, but he doesn't think that the NBA would let his son come into the bubble when they allow families to come in later in the run. And so he didn't want to risk having to make that decision or being apart from his son or himself getting COVID and perhaps handing it down to anyone in his family. So he's opting out. And I, Brian, for one, have zero problem with this. And I wouldn't have a problem if other players opted out for different reasons. If your reason is social justice, or if your reason is you're just not medically comfortable, or if your reason is like Avery's family, you have a specific family concern. I think anybody that opts out deserves to be given the benefit of the doubt. And if you don't want to go, you shouldn't have to go, and you shouldn't be shamed for it. And that's one of the points you make in your piece.
Well, yeah, I just look, what we're asking these guys to do is not normal. Like, if you are a regular person with a regular job and you have reasons to not go into work, you know, hopefully you have the ability to work around that. Maybe you can work from home. Maybe you can do something else. But what you're really probably not going to be asked to do is go isolate from your family for a certain amount of time. Or you're certainly not going to be asked to hopefully go out and work in conditions that might bring something home that could be unsafe for a member of your family. I realize that's not true for everyone. And there are people who are in that position and shouldn't be. But, you know, for NBA guys, I understand they make money. They, yes. But like what they're being asked to do to isolate themselves from their families, to put themselves in a situation perhaps where you know, they might be putting a family member at risk. I mean, that's not something we should demand anybody do for our own entertainment. Like, it's not like they're doing something that's essential to the function of society. Like, you know, air traffic control or something like that. This is basketball we're talking about. So you can't expect guys to do things that would be unsafe in that way.
And the other thing you highlight in your article is that J.R. Smith, who's had a long NBA career, is likely to be in first position to replace Bradley on the Laker roster if they decide to replace him? Why J.R. Smith?
Because he's sort of the best guy available. When you combine the fact that there just aren't very many choices, and if you know, John, you read a list earlier in the show. I've got a couple lists, links to lists on in that story. But if you start laying it out there, you know, guys like Trey Burke or, you know, Jerry and Grant. I mean, if you're not an NBA diehard, you don't even know who these people are. And so the options aren't great. And then you combine that with the fact that the Lakers know J.R. Smith. They've worked him out a couple times already. Remember, like, when they ended up with Dion Waiters, J.R. Smith was another option at that point. So they know him. He's a clutch client. So, you know, the Lakers sort of power structure knows him. LeBron knows him. And this is a difficult time to be bringing in five or six guys to try to work them out. There's a pandemic going on. Got to figure out how to get to Orlando. This is the easiest way to do it.
All right. And this will come full circle when we play Game of Games next. I'll explain what that means coming up. Lindsay against Brian against Funchess. Game of Games next, 710 ESPN. All right, so it's time for Game of Games. We decided we're going to play a game at the end of every show and then total up the points at the end of the month to see who wins. Yesterday, I won, which, Lindsay, was that my second win? Is it two for me, two for you, two for Mace, one for Funch? Is that where
we're
at?
That is correct. That's the current standings of Game of Games.
Okay, and Brian, this will be your chance to get on the board. It'll be a little embarrassing if you win, because you'll have the same amount of wins as Funch, and Funch has played every single time we've ever done this, and you will just be one for one. So I wish you the best of luck. Now, as many of you know, so this is going to be Brian against Funch and against Lindsay, three-person competition. As I often say in the show, because of my employment with the Lakers, I am not allowed to talk about players who are under contract to other teams. I can't, you know, other than describe what they're doing in games, I can't talk about, you know, free agency and should the Lakers trade for him or blah, 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 blah. The Lakers get very, very mad at Michael and I or Trudell if we go down that road. But Brian, J.R. Smith is not on a team, which means with him being one of the leading candidates to replace Avery Bradley on the Laker roster in Orlando, I have a quiz, true or false, about J.R. Smith. Now, there are seven of these. You will each get a chance to answer. Lindsay, you get to go first. Here it is. When Smith played for the Nuggets, he announced to the media that he wanted to be called by his real name, Earl. But then he missed 8 of 9 shots that night and switched back to J.R. for good. Is that true or false?
I'm going to go true.
All right, Fudge.
That sounds like a true J.R. Smith story.
Brian?
I do remember the Earl era. I believe that is true.
It is true. He was called Earl literally for about 8 hours, and he played so bad that he said, screw that, it's too complicated, I'm going back to J.R. Everybody on the board. Funch, true or false, J.R. won co-MVP along with Dwight Howard at the 2004 McDonald's High School All-American game?
False.
All right, Brian.
I will say true.
Lindsay.
Wait, what year? What year?
2004.
True.
All right, Lindsay.
I believe that is true as well.
It is true. Lindsay and Brian take the lead. They were co-MVPs at that game. All right, Brian. JR committed to Syracuse out of high school, but never played a game for the Orange. Instead, he turned pro and went straight to the NBA. True or false?
Well, the turning pro part is definitely true. I don't remember where he committed, so that could be part of the trick question. I will say false. I'm going to play the player and not the game. Or
okay.
Something like that.
right. You're going false. Lindsay?
I think since the first two are true, just by default, I'm going to go false.
Okay, Funch.
That's false.
All three of you completely sniffed that out. I absolutely made it up. It is Lindsay 3, Brian 3, Funches 2. All right, Lindsay, back to you. During the NBA lockout in 2011, Smith went to play in China. His deal was estimated to be worth around $3 million, the highest in CBL history. He averaged 34 points per game and had four 50-point games in China. True or false?
I'm going to say that it was, how much did you say?
$3 million for his 1 year in China.
I'm going to say that it's true.
Okay, fine.
Sounds a little low. I'll say false.
Okay, BK.
I'll say true.
Lindsay and Brian are 4 for 4. Funch, you are in the cellar. That is absolutely 100% true. The amazing thing is four 50-point games in China. He was the leading scorer in the league. All right, Funch, you get to go first here. Smith has four daughters. Chauncey Billups and David West are the godfathers of the first two. True or false?
It's true.
Okay, Brian.
I'm going to say false.
Lindsay, break the tie.
I'm going to guess that it's true.
Lindsay, you finally missed one. He does have four daughters, but the godfathers are Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul. Brian, you have a chance to do what I did yesterday and go 7 for 7. You're 5 for 5. But Funch, you go first. Or Lindsay, or did you go first that last time, Funch, with the daughters?
No, I did not.
Okay, so you go first this time. LeBron's nickname for JR is 911, because when there's an emergency, you give him the ball and he's cash. True or false?
I think it's false. Got to be false.
Okay, Brian.
That's a terrible nickname. I will say true.
Lindsay.
I know that's true because I remember seeing it on a Snapchat story. I just don't remember if it was LeBron that came up with it, but I know that I feel like that. I don't know if it's a trick. I think it's true because I know I saw it on a Snapchat story.
You were right. It is true, and you get it. Brian, you're 6 for 6. Lindsay's got 5. Funch, you are so far out of this. You're playing for pride. And this is the last question. Brian, your chance for immortality, or at least to be the first guy to go 7 for 7 since I did it yesterday. So, Brian, you get to go first. Smith was selected 4th overall in the 2004 NBA draft by New Orleans, despite choosing not to work out for any teams before the draft. This was a choice he made after receiving a promise from a team in the middle of the lottery they would draft him if he was still there. True or false?
True.
Lindsay?
I think it's false.
Funch?
False.
It is false. He was drafted. Brian, you are now in a tie with Lindsay. Funch, you finished with 3 out of 7. That exact story is true about Dion Waiters. Dion Waiters was the one who did not work out for any teams, who was drafted 4th. JR, I think, was taken 18th in the draft in 2004.
It was at least by New Orleans. So that part was true.
All right, which means we need the tiebreaker. It's between Lindsay and Brian, and here it is.
Dun, dun, dun.
In his highest scoring NBA season, how many points per game did JR average that year, closest without going over? Brian, how many points did JR Smith average in his highest scoring NBA season?
I will say 17 and a half.
17.5?
Yes.
All right, Lindsay.
Does this count his career in China or just NBA?
No, NBA season, highest points per game.
All right. I'm going to guess.
There's a strategy you could employ here, but I will not say anything more than that.
$1?
Or 17.6, either one. You better, that's what you can do.
That's what I was going to do, so I'm going to go with 17.6, just to be a jerk. Sorry.
And it's a good thing you did, because, Brian, you were very, very close. The actual number is 13.1.
Wow.
Lindsay gets it for going high.
Sorry.
And Lindsay takes the lead in Game of Games, her third career victory. Brian, that was very well fought.
That was dirty pool, Lindsay.
You set it up for me.
Well, not really. Yeah, she had to pick higher or lower, basically, at that point. 17.5. Had you gone 18 even, she couldn't have. Well, the only way she could have beat you was to go 18.1. But very well played. All right, coming up next. Sliwa will get in here. We'll do a little crosstalk. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace, 710 ESPN. All right, Sliwa's here. Brian Kamenetsky's in for Mace as we tackle a little crosstalk. How you doing, Alan?
Everything is good. Appreciate it, John.
Sliwa, you, for people who don't know, one of Sliwa's other jobs, we were just talking about Brian's other jobs, one of Alan's other jobs is he's the pre- and post-game host for Lakers basketball. Alan, answer this question any way you want. How much of a loss is it that the Lakers will not have Avery Bradley in Orlando?
It's going to hurt him. I honestly love those little things that he did. And, John, you know this. I mean, every championship team, it's all those role players, right? I mean, we knew what Kobe and Shaq were going to do every night. We knew what Powell and Kobe were going to do. But it's those players that you're not really paying too much attention to. I think that Avery Bradley loss is it's going to be big for the Lakers. And listen, if it's J.R. Smith or another offensive type player that replaces him, I just loved Avery Bradley defensively. Look at all the guards that are, you know, going to be in these playoffs that we face, whether it's James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard. Like, we go down the list of all the good guards. It was nice to have a guy like Avery Bradley that can match up against him. So I think it's going to definitely have its impact.
You know, I think I mentioned this to Brian earlier in the show. There were 20 games this year where Avery Bradley didn't start. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope started in his place. Do you know what the Lakers' record was in those games?
I saw somebody send out a tweet. It was ridiculous, right? They did very well.
Yeah, they were 17-3. And KCP played very, very well. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get the minutes. I think Alex Caruso is going to get the minutes. Brian, will Rondo get some of those minutes?
Yes. But it's different. Like, I think Rondo will get the minutes that otherwise would have gone to Rondo anyway, because he gets ball handling responsibilities. And that's not something that Avery Bradley ever did. It's part of the reason that you can replace Bradley, who's listed as a point guard, with a 6'6" swingman in J.R. Smith, because Bradley really didn't function that way. So I think Rondo's minutes are probably impacted least among all the guys that are left in the backcourt.
By the way, breaking news. We mentioned earlier in the show that we found out yesterday Nikola Jokic tested positive for coronavirus. Malcolm Brogdon of the Pacers, now being reported by Shams Charania that Buddy Hield of the Sacramento Kings has tested positive for coronavirus. Alan, how many of these should we expect? Is it reasonable to think that every team is going to have at least one positive test, or is that probably overestimating what the effect is going to be?
Well, John, I mean, I don't want this to sound crazy either, but isn't this kind of what the NBA was expecting? This is part of the restart, right? Like, there's a reason why they're doing all this now. There's a reason.
Oh, Alan, I'll take it a step further. I've talked to people today. I've talked to a lot of people today, and I've heard this more than once. If you're going to get COVID, getting it now is actually advantageous because you get it out of the way, and then you can go down to Orlando after you've quarantined for a couple of weeks and be there from the beginning. Now, that's assuming, guys, that you can't get it again. Most people think you can't. Most doctors have said that it doesn't appear that you can get it more than once, but they don't know. That's the answer to so many questions about this virus, Alan. I don't know. So I would never wish this upon anyone. So I don't want to say, oh, it's a good thing that guy got it. But I heard that today more than once.
Yeah, what I'm referring to is not it's a good thing. What I'm referring to more is, like, I think it's expected, right? I think the NBA, part of that strategy, like you're mentioning, is, okay, well, we're going to find out who has it, hopefully whatever those players are or coaching staff or personnel, that they're healthy, that they're safe, they're quarantined for a couple of weeks. By the time they get to Orlando, that's the idea of you're walking into this bubble where I don't know if that's going to be the case for baseball. Still don't know really, you know, what the plan is from the NFL side of things, and I'm sure they'll just keep kind of delaying until they have to figure out what to do, or maybe they're grabbing data from some of these other leagues over these next 30 days or so. But every time you see it, I obviously just saw this as well, so Shams put this out, the Buddy Hield test positive. Every time you see it, there's a, oh man, that's crazy. And then it kind of settles in. You're like, well, I think we're going to expect this a lot more than, you know, 30 days ago when it maybe the news wasn't happening as much of specific individuals that have it. But now walking into these sports coming back, you got to imagine there's a lot of players that probably will get it.
Yeah, it's a reflection of like the testing averages, you know, as testing is more widespread, the positive testing averages in the country, at least in a lot of places in the country, are going up. I mean, and going up pretty quickly. So I think to some degree, this is going to be dependent on where the player is. You know, players in Florida that have been out and about or doing stuff, you know, with the Magic or with the Heat, players in California with the Lakers, the Clippers, you know, if depending on how much they've been out, you know, these are places where the rate of positive tests is kind of creeping up a little bit. You know, particularly in Florida, particularly in North Carolina, you know, there's Georgia, some other places where a lot of players are. Like Alan said, the NBA expects this. Like, there, it is not a prevent all COVID plan. It is a find it and contain it plan, because, you know, they wouldn't go through all this if it was one or two positive tests and we got to shut the whole thing down.
Hey, Alan, John, I was just going to say, John, how do you think, and I know this is so tough to determine, but now that we actually feel, you know, we can talk about, okay, this is at least the plan, right? Nobody has any idea if this is going to work for MLS, for the NBA, for the – you're the one, I know I've mentioned this a couple times when you said a couple weeks ago, is be cautious, because that's what you were hearing from many people, that the plan is there. It doesn't mean that it's going to be executed. How do you think – how do you think these seasons, if a champion is crowned in the NBA, let's just use hypothetically as an example, do you think when it's all said and done, it doesn't – I don't want to say it doesn't matter who won it, but how many excuses do you think are going to be there? Well, because it was COVID, or it says – I mean, I'll tell you, if the Lakers won, we shouldn't care how they won and got number 17. I think it's as much of a challenge this year as it is even in a regular season. Or do you think there's going to be a lot of fans and personnel and everybody saying, well, it's because this happened and that happened that the Lakers got it, or the Rockets got it, or the Bucks got it?
The honest answer to your question is it depends how it plays out. In other words, if a ton of guys get COVID and the finals turns out to be two teams that are missing their top two stars each, then I think people are going to look at the championship in a different way. But I've said this consistently since they shut the season down. Assuming that most of the stars are able to compete, I actually think this is as much of a legitimate title as you could win in any other year. Think about it, Alan. When you play these additional eight games, they would have had north of a 70-game season. They would have battled the coronavirus, in the case of the Lakers, an indescribable tragedy with Kobe that could have derailed the entire season, let alone the franchise, and didn't. They've almost played in his honor and played great. In the first year that Anthony Davis and LeBron James team up, they would, and in Frank Vogel's first season, Brian, you know this, very rarely, there's a learning curve on these things. Very rarely does a first-year head coach and a first-year free agent get together and run the table and win it. Right. It just, you know, normally you've got to go in stages. If the Lakers were able to do it, I would recognize it as legitimate of a title as any of the other ones they've won. How about you guys?
I think basketball, like anybody looks at this and thinks the NBA is most of the way through their season. All the obstacles that you're talking about, John, like, I don't think anybody's looking at the NBA going, come on, really? Assuming, like you say, that it's not turned, like, the result isn't based on Giannis or Paul George or Kawhi having to leave because of coronavirus. But, you know, I think it'll be different in baseball. if you're a Dodger fan and the Dodgers go through this 60-game thing and they win, and like, yeah, it's exciting. It's a real championship. Everybody's playing under the same rules and so on and so on and so on. But you've waited in since 1988. It's not going to be as satisfying. It's not going to feel the same. You're not going to celebrate it the same way. It won't. You won't be able to participate in it the same way. So it'll be underwhelming and disappointing in that way. But, Alan, I think the real answer to that question that you're asking is, if my team wins a championship, then it is 100% legitimate. If your team wins,
it was because of COVID-19.
There is an asterisk. It was not legitimate. And really, what the team that should have won was my team.
But you know, BK, there's going to be, of course, fan bases that are like that. But there's kind of this curiosity. Now, John, it's fair. John, let's just use as an example, if the Miami Heat won the NBA championship and it's because Giannis was out and that's how they got there, and then the Western Conference, they played the Rockets because other favorites are also out because of COVID-19, just using that as an example. Yes, you're always going to look at it that way, except the team that won. But it's, you know, when you say, BK, when you talk about, okay, well, Dodgers haven't won since 1988. They've been waiting for this. They maybe should have won in 2017 if it wasn't for the Astros. Like, all these things you start stacking up, I don't know. I just kind of – the way – I'm excited about sports as I've never been before, and I know part of that has to do with the fact that we just had sports taken away for the first time ever. But at the same time, I guess how things play out is going to, you know, you'll just have that feeling. You'll either have a good feeling that it was legitimate, or you have a feeling like, man, this is just obviously forced because they're trying to just complete these seasons.
Okay, Sliwa, we earlier in the show did a bit where we stole this off social media.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be honest. Okay.
Okay.
No, don't make stuff up. What movie or show or TV show comes to mind that made you cry and you didn't see it coming? In other words, you're just watching a movie and for whatever reason you teared up. What pops into your head?
Steel Magnolias, 100%. Okay. I was like, what the hell is going on here? What kind of a movie is this? Okay. So
and you got hooked and you cried at the end. Oh, God. That's all. My two were Mr. Holland's Opus. I cried at the end of League of Their Own when Gina Davis and Lori Petty are
that's good,
old
right
women.
There.
Mm-hmm. And they started crying. I'm like, what the hell? What am I doing? What am I crying here? What part of Steel Magnolias did you cry in?
Julia Roberts.
At the end when she gets it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was, and it was like, that scene was so devastating when she's with her, you know, she's with her kid, maybe her kid's 1 year old or younger than that, whatever it was. And she's cooking. And then all of a sudden she starts getting, you know, she starts feeling her, was she having seizures? I think it was seizures that she was having. Just kind of trying to think back. I was like, this Chernoff, who would make a film like, who would make a film like this? By the way, here's another one, Lion King.
Oh, yeah, well, sure.
When I was a little kid, man, like, actually, I could
dad,
probably watch
when
it
his,
right up.
When his dad
absolutely.
Dies?
Absolutely.
You know, it was funny. The other one that we all kind of agreed gets you and you don't even know it, and it's in the beginning of the movie, is Up. Have you ever seen the Pixar movie Up?
No, I don't think I saw.
This old
no.
man loses his wife. She gets cancer and dies in the beginning, and you're just... come on.
Montage. It's this death montage of how this man ends up alone.
I probably had a couple more during one of those Rockies or Karate Kids. I probably have a couple more. Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I just can't think of, like, I'm at a point now where almost everything makes me cry. Like, it is not hard to get me to cry in a movie.
That's awesome.
So it's not
did you guys ever see the original Brian song? With Gail Sayers and
it's
Brian Piccolo?
Years. Yeah,
no.
It's been years.
Okay, so there's another one where John Cappelletti, who played for the Rams, won the Heisman Trophy at Penn State. Have you guys ever seen Something for Joey? He had a younger brother who had terminal cancer, and they tried to keep his life light and try to keep him happy, but he was in the hospital getting treatments all the time. And Cappelletti wins the Heisman and gives it to his younger brother, who he knew only had months to live. and his brother didn't understand what was happening. And wow. And you just lose it. He gets the Heisman at like the Heisman dinner, and he explains to the audience, okay, I have a younger brother, Joseph. He's not going to make it. But he's here tonight, and he was my inspiration.
That's enough to get me. They
give him the trophy, and his little brother's like going to his dad, I don't understand what's happening. He goes, you got to go up there. He just gave you the trophy, and the whole room is just loses it. I mean, it's unbelievable. But in that case, you knew what you were getting into. Mm-hmm. You know, but it wasn't some like blindside thing that just hit you out of the blue.
Especially when you're a kid, right? Like you watch some of those movies as a kid. I'm like, what the mom? Why are you letting me watch this? You know, like you don't understand it. But I joke around when I say Lion King, but I feel like Lion King that came out of nowhere. Like you would have never thought that was going to happen. And this is, I don't know how long ago it was when the original came out, but I was probably 8 or 10 or whatever I was. Yeah, that one that was one of them.
Guys, what about the beginning of Bambi? Bambi.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, whoa. But like movies back then, they didn't mess around with like kids' emotions back then. Like you were expected to be tough. Get in there. Like there was, I'll see if I can come with this tomorrow. There's a list of movies that by today's sensibilities, when you would be shocked that they were just rated PG. Like back then it was like, you know, suck it up, kid, you know? But like the beginning of Bambi is brutal. It would never do that now.
I'm trying to look up, literally trying to look up. There's other movies that I could think of, but those.
Oh, by the way, okay. Last thing on this subject, a mini rant. A few years ago, somebody, it was Netflix or Disney or somebody, tried to remake Brian's Song. Okay, like you can't remake Brian's Song. In the original Brian's Song, Billy Dee Williams plays Gale Sayers, James Caan plays Brian Piccolo, and they just nail it. It's like the greatest sports movie. I mean, just completely nail it. And then like 10 years ago, some Yahoo at a network says, well, let's remake it for a modern generation. It's like the saddest football movie ever. You can't remake Brian's Song. Whoever came up with that idea should get in a new line of work. That was ridiculous. All right, coming up, more Crosstalk. Slee was here. Brian Kamenetsky's here. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Crosstalk on 710 ESPN is powered by Power Pro Heating and Air and their Cross-Trade Power Pro Service Specials. Great Cross-Trade service for our listeners right now, a $99 drain cleaning. Go to powerproplumbing.com for all that information. Hey, John, I was going to throw this both your guys' way. I know now that we can kind of put baseball to the side in the sense of we don't have to worry about if they're going to have a season, or at least the question now is just going to come down to COVID-19. Of everything that's laid out for these 60 games, some of the different rule changes that they have, is it just me, or do you feel like just because every game is so important now, it's kind of as exciting, I think, as it's ever been? And I know there's always been conversation about baseball, way too many games, the season's too long, all that stuff. Do you guys feel the same way that the way this is structured? I know it's not ideal. I know it's not perfect for the Dodgers, but it's going to be a damn good, exciting 60 games if they can get these 60 games in.
I do think that. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out. But let me address the elephant in the room. Everyone I've talked to, on the air and off, I haven't met anybody that's 100% confident they can pull this off. Buster Olney was incredibly pessimistic when we had him on the show yesterday, Brian, that they'll even have a season. So are we selling everybody? You know, basketball seems to at least have a plan and at least have protocols and at least seems to have given their sport the best chance to thread this needle and to pull this off. Baseball's talking about traveling and staying in different hotels, and there's no bubble, and you know, 13 Phillies have gotten COVID. Is this just a pipe dream that we're all selling to the people that baseball is going to go and it's not going to hit any coronavirus bumps?
Yeah, it's going to hit bumps. Look at they had to stop in Japan. I believe they had to at least delay in Korea.
where they, you know, they started and then delayed and they've come back. And since then, I guess it's been okay. But these are countries with far more aggressive mitigation than what we have in the U.S. And you look and, you know, the percentages of positive tests. I'm not talking about the number of tests. I'm talking about the numbers of people who test positive in places like Florida are going through the roof right now. California is struggling with coronavirus, despite having much more rigid rules in place than they have. Another, Texas is really struggling again. We've kind of just decided as Americans that coronavirus is done and we're kind of done with it. But for people who want their sports to be uninterrupted, it's not going to work out well. I think baseball is going to struggle based on the size of the rosters and the travel and all these other things. I think football is going to be a nightmare. Basketball has a chance because it's the smallest rosters and they've got, I think, a pretty good plan. But that's still not guaranteed. But I don't think any of this in college sports are even worse. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of wishful thinking going on.
I feel like, too, John, I feel like there's a psychological part of this where we want sports back so bad. And we just want, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that are just hoping, hey, can we just get our normal back? And I think at this point, I don't even know what that normal is. I don't go anywhere without a mask. Most people don't. You're obviously always social distancing. But I think, you know, when you're saying, are we selling like this bag of goods that we potentially, you know, could very easily not have in the next 30 or 60 days, I think part of us are all just hoping so much that they can complete this, that they could do it the right way. The proper testing is going to be there. Everybody's going to abide by this bubble in Orlando. Probably unrealistic, but there's this just have faith, hope it happens, and hopefully they do it right. But I understand exactly what you're saying. This could easily not work out, and we're all sitting here saying, okay, it looks like we're not going to have sports probably for the rest of this year. That's not unrealistic.
Oh, well, I feel much better about it. There's a distinction in my mind between basketball and the other sports. I think basketball, and if you just listen to Dr. Fauci, basketball has given themselves a real chance. I think that they're going to – they've got everybody in the same place. They're testing like crazy. You know, they very easily, basketball could have pivoted to, like, for example, let's say the Lakers meet the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. Send everybody back to L.A. and just do it like baseball's doing it with the Dodgers and Angels. Let them sleep in their own beds. They're not doing that. Mm-hmm. They are trying to tilt the odds in every way they can medically to pull this off. Can we say that about the other sports? The other sports aren't half as restrictive as the NBA is being. It seems weird. In football, I have no idea what football's doing.
NFL has, I think they're just putting it off as long as they can before, you know, where they can sort of, where you don't want to put in rules that you might have to change. You want to say we're going to do X, Y, and Z and then have to adjust it to A, B, and C, whatever it might be. But I'm 1,000% sure that by the time, you know, August, September rolls around, that the NFL season is not going to look normal. It is not going to be a typical, you know, NFL thing where the only real difference that you can see is no fans in the stands. It's going to be way different because it's the only way they're going to be able to get this done. And Alan, like, I don't see how you can have an NFL season without demanding all of these guys quarantine basically the entire time. So you're talking 17 weeks plus playoffs where not only they can't go anywhere, but if they're staying at home, their families can't go anywhere. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I mentioned this to Kirk Morrison last night, and he's going to be joining the show tonight as well. But I mentioned it. I'm like, Kirk, this was right at the end of the show. I'm like, can you do me a favor tomorrow? Explain to everyone how NFL is going to make this work. Like, how is it physically possible to make it work? So hopefully you give somewhat of a, you know, obviously some answers. I think the only thing the NFL has on their time or has on their side is, when I say time, I want to make sure that I emphasize this. It's just merely the fact that there are some other sports coming before them.
And they can maybe use as a test laboratory. I agree.
Something, right? Like maybe they'll be able to get some information out of what happens, and maybe they use that to their advantage. But if let's just put NFL aside for a quick second. How about college football? I mean, just USC football players, they return to campus. They're beginning voluntary workouts. I mean, this is coming off of the Clemson news where it was, I think, 23 players. LSU, 30 players and staff tested positive or came in contact with someone who had. So, I mean, the college part of it is mind-boggling to me because it's not just a handful of teams. There's obviously schools spread across the country. So it's
right. And, Alan, too, you have to add to that that, you know, the situation right now, all of these plans we were talking about it when it really looked like we were reducing as a nation, really reducing the amount of cases in the country. I just saw a graph today where we're back up to where we were at the peak in terms of cases per day.
But couldn't I argue,
unfortunately, death it,
Brian, but, couldn't but I argue John, if we like, look at that, if you look at cases per day, I know they're up.
It's testing. There's no question. It's testing.
Are we testing way more people we were then?
We are, but in places like Florida, in places like Texas, in places, you know, California's starting to creep up again. Arizona, the rate of positive tests is increasing incredibly fast. And so with college sports, you can't put college teams on fields if students aren't on campus. And you know, because I mean, that's just wildly exploitative to make these kids go play when you're not even having, when they're not even able to go to class. You know, it's not safe enough for them to go to class, but it is safe for them to play football. Come on. And so, you know, you can't have that. And right now it looked before like, okay, maybe we could have kids on campuses. And look, as a parent, like this is something that's really, you know, I'm paying close attention to. Yeah, you know, you can't right now. I don't know if schools that had thought they would be able to have kids on campus will be able to do that in the fall. And if that happens, there will be no college sports.
Alan, what do you got coming up on the show tonight?
Maria Torres, actually, just to kind of hit exactly BK what you were mentioning right there. Maria Torres is with the LA Times, and she's just highlighting that the nine different locations for each team that they'll be playing, whether it's in, you know, Houston or it's with the Rangers or San Diego, COVID-19 hospitalizations, how they've increased in the specific locations that Dodgers and Angels will be playing at. So that's kind of a interesting angle to take. And then Kirk Morrison will join the show as well.
All right, that's coming up, the Sliwa Show. Thank you, Brian. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yes.
In Ireland is in the books. Sliwa next, 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.